Over to you, Michael.
Hello, everybody. Just give me a second to get the slides up. All right, so first of all, thank everyone for attending this session today, and thank you very much for having me down for a presentation. We've got a product called the Data Citation Index. Again, my name is Michael Tackett. I'm with Thomson Reuters. I'm the Director of Product Strategy in our Scientific and Scholarly Research Group. I realize I didn't give too much background on Thomson Reuters, but I work primarily on a product called the Web of Science and Web of Knowledge, which is a citation index which traces its roots back to the old ISI, or Institution for Scientific Information, which some of you may be familiar with. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about just what drove us at Thomson Reuters to produce the product called the Data Citation Index, give a little bit of background on that through what we've looked at with the data landscape, talk about some of the challenges we see, little bit of a sense of the product itself, and then I had questions and answers, but as we mentioned, we'll probably save those for the end just in the interest of time. So I think everyone, particularly this audience, is aware of the ubiquity and expansion of data. I like to say when I first saw this slide that a colleague gave me, I didn't even know what a zettabyte was. But with the rapid expansion of data in general, and this survey by the IDC Digital Universe Study predicts that it will grow by a factor of 44 through 2020, we see this increasingly have an impact on research data. We only see this growing over time. We also see studies from folks like PLOS who are showing that a larger proportion of articles are indeed publishing on shared data sets. So most recently, we see up to a third of those articles, and again, this goes to some gene data, but up to a third of those articles are sharing data. And we see a lot of the increasing visibility of data. Certainly the data site project, which was just mentioned, Australian National Data Service, and a lot of these agencies that are coming up that are providing services or assistance to folks that want to establish DOIs or other identifiers, and in general helping the evolution, if you will, of data as a first-class citizen in the research ecosystem. Sorry, the mic sort of keeps dropping out. I apologize for that. We also see a lot of activity with journal publishers, whether it's folks like Springer who are putting Springer images out there as data sets, or data journals themselves that are publishing journals and articles specifically on data. So with all this activity, why are researchers still hiding their data? To be honest, I'm not sure it's so much about hiding their data, but that there's sort of not so much consistency in exposing their data, and there's a lot of uncertainty and lack of knowledge about what to do and how to share that data and how to make it available to others. At Thomson Reuters, as part of the lead-up to the Data Citation Index, we did some survey work, and this is a survey of researchers who did deposit data, and you can see that there's a wide variety of where they deposited that data. Sometimes it's at the publisher website, sometimes it's in a repository, sometimes it's in an institutional repository, quite often it's in a personal or a departmental website. So there's a wide range of where and how folks are putting this data in places where it can be reused. So what we've seen as a real catalyst to this, and I'm probably preaching to the choir a bit here with this audience, is the emergence of funding mandates. So going back 10 years ago with the NIH, and them establishing a data sharing policy of applications of over $500,000, which are expected to address data sharing. I think the language was maybe not that enforced, if you will, back or that specific, so it was hard to enforce. The real catalyst we saw was in 2011 with the NSF requiring data management plans with any applications. This not only in the US, the Wellcome Trust in the UK, the Australian Research Council in Australia have similar mandates, just generally pushing the emphasis on data being required to be managed properly as again, sort of a first-class citizen in research output. More recently, again, we see communications from the NSF about applications being rejected or terminated if they don't have a data management plan. So it's sort of moving out of a recommendation and a suggestion and a tick box that folks might put on their grant applications to having a little bit more weight behind it that they really have to start doing this. And now we sort of start to see data being elevated perhaps to article status. The NSF's biosketch policy changed from publications to products, and those products include data sets, software, patents, and copyrights. So you can see there's a general tide of change going on where folks are across the board recognizing the increasing importance of data. So we've heard about some of this, and I think, again, a lot of you in the audience are very familiar with this, but there's a variety of challenges here. It's about access and discovery. So there's a lot of repositories. There's a lot of issues with exposing those repositories. Citation standards are really in their infancy, and that's not something that is very clear to researchers. You know, citing a journal article is pretty common and pretty standard. Data citations is obviously not. Sometimes there's a lack of willingness to deposit and cite. Again, not sure whether that's going to be discovered, not sure whether they're going to get the proper credit for it, recognition for their works that they're producing and disseminating. So as we start to look at the world of research and data repositories, we look around the world and see that there are, you know, probably more than this, but certainly over 500 repositories well established already. Major concentration in North America and Europe, but really all over the world we see folks paying attention to this and establishing repositories. And the sources, again, we're in this panel talking about general solutions, so these sources are great, they're out there, but a solution that brings them together that allows the discoverability of multiple data repositories is something that we at Thomson Reuters saw sort of a need for in the market, and that's why we've developed the Data Citation Index. Just a little bit, a couple quotes from some research about the barriers to citing data. Again, this reiterates some of what I said earlier, but lack of standards for citation, concern about proper recognition and evaluation of the materials, formats may be cumbersome and not easy to do, generally just difficulty for folks to cite data properly. They see that it should be, but they don't necessarily know how to do it. And this is just an example, again, sort of what we do day in and day out at Thomson Reuters in the group I'm in is indexing journals. So we index within the Web of Science itself, over 12,000 journals across the broader Web of Knowledge platform of databases. There's some 25,000 journals. And we index those. We index all the metadata. We index the citations. When it comes to data studies, citations to data, there's a real inconsistency in how those data studies are cited. So the top example there about murder cases in 33 large urban counties, that was mentioned in the full text of an article. There's a suggested format there for how it would be nice if it were cited. And then in the lower example, that's citing an item in the gene expression omnibus, but again, it's in the acknowledgement section of a paper, so it's not as apparent and it's not exposed in the way typical citations are that are used for tracking impact of publications and works. So again, just to reiterate the point about researchers being concerned about not receiving appropriate credit, there is agreement on, you know, wanting to share data and seeing that it's important for folks to receive credit for that data and that they would spend more time producing that output if they did receive credit for it, but there's a general lack of feeling that they are credited for it today. So where do we start? And this will get into a little bit closer to the Data Citation Index itself. We want to enable the discovery of data repositories and data in the of traditional literature, so putting the data alongside the journal papers, the conference proceedings, the patent literature that we may cover. We want to help researchers find that data and track the impact of their output. We want to help establish, and I really should say help, because we can't do this ourselves, but establish attribution standards and incentives to make the data discoverable. And ultimately, we want to provide expanded measurement of research output and assessment, which, of course, is important not only to the researchers, but also to the funders. So Certainly won't go into video here, but there is a video if folks want to see it on our website at the Web of Knowledge that would show a little bit of a background on the Data Citation Index. But last October, we launched a new product on the Web of Knowledge called the Data Citation Index. And I'm just going to quickly go into a little bit of how we go about doing that and a couple of screenshots just to give you a feel for what it looks like. So first off, we sort of going back to our background with the Web of Science and the coverage that we have pretty specific selection criteria for how we choose journals to be included in that Web of Science. We've carried some of that over to the data world, if you will, and established some selection criteria for data repositories that we are covering. First, we want to make sure that the material is relevant to the research community, that it's scholarly data, if you will, that it's tied to outputs of research. We want to ensure that there's a persistence and stability to the repository and that that repository does have a steady flow of new data sets, data studies being deposited there. Importantly, we do need metadata. We need the data to be able to index it properly, to create the discoverability and attribution that we'd like to of the data sets that are in that repository. So it's very important that they have that, that element. And then we look for the repositories, if possible, to have links from the data to the literature. So a lot of the repositories we're working with are monitoring and tracking where that data is used, acknowledged, maybe sometimes cited in the literature, and we like to get that data from the repository so we can add it to the index. Basically, the very, very simplistic process flow is we work with repositories, we establish kind of how we're going to get data flows from them, we take the descriptive metadata from them, we do some analysis, we have internal editors and analysts that will go through that data, we might add, augment that data a little bit, help with some normalization, help match it to some standard topic categories, topic taxonomies that we have within the Web of Knowledge, just to add some consistency to the degree that we. That then goes into the Web of Knowledge as a data citation index record. Right now, we organize those in three different layers, if you will. So again, we're used to the journal, issue, article kind of world, if you will. The data world is not really consistent across the board, but we've sort of established a three-layered approach to this where we have a record for the repository itself and then a record for the data study, which may contain data sets. Now, for every repository we're covering the repository, but whether they have data studies and data sets nested varies from repository to repository. A little bit of a breakdown on the coverage here. About half the coverage, and this is probably still accurate, this was accurate as of a few months ago, about half the coverage is in the life sciences, roughly a quarter, 22% in the physical sciences, another 20% in the social sciences, and then smaller amounts that are either multidisciplinary or in the arts and humanities. Now I'll just give you a few screenshots. Certainly not doing a demo, but I want to give you a little bit of a feel for this. So those of you that may be familiar with the Web of Science or Web of Knowledge, it's very standard in terms of being consistent with typical functionality on the Web of Science. You know, typical search of a citation database, researcher goes in, puts in a topic, gets a set of results. This comes back with various ability to navigate the results, to refine the results. We have some analytical capabilities on the platform that allow you to look at a result set so you can see which institutions are doing the research in this example or which repositories different records may be coming from as another example. The record itself has a number of different data elements on it. We do source most of this from the repositories themselves. We like to, of course, have the title and author and source information, the abstract, if it's available from the repositories, the document type, the data type that's covered by the actual data element behind the scenes, a little bit of taxonomic data that is included within the records. And then down at the bottom, you'll see some associations of associated data sets that are associated with this data study, if you will. On the right-hand side over here, you'll see we will track the number of times a data set has been cited right now based on the information from the repositories. We'll also provide a link to a suggested citation format, which is actually based on the data cite folks, kind of a standard format that researchers can use to cite the data set. And again, this is in hopes of encouraging progress, evolution of data in the scholarly research world. The full record also serves as sort of a jumping-off point to literature, sort of primary journal articles, if you will, that have cited the data set, so you can go from that to the articles and then follow those articles to other articles, if you will. And then, of course, probably the punchline of it is linking out to the actual data set itself, this one at the Gene Expression Omnibus. So I've mentioned a couple of these, a little bit of the challenges, the metadata availability. The repositories are often first and foremost focused on helping folks deposit data and establishing permanence for that data and helping them, you know, add a little bit of initial metadata to it, but they're not necessarily there to syndicate that metadata out to indexes that might want to increase discoverability, and the resources may just be limited in that area of expertise. The metadata from repository to repository varies greatly, so there's some inconsistencies there. Data repositories are not, they're not static. You know, there's a lot of variation there, and there's some inconsistencies, whether the permanence on individual data sets can vary from repository to repository. And then we do work with a lot of partnerships. We work with folks at DataCite. We work with folks at the Australian National Data Service. Try to make sure that we're trying as a group to further this area of research. So ultimately, what are we trying to get to? We want to help folks to discover data that is most important to scholarly research. We do that certainly in the world of journals. We've been doing that for a very long time, and we see data as increasingly important in that space. We want to help with the links and connections of the data to the literature. We want to create measures of the data use and reuse, important both to the researchers and to the funding agencies, certainly. And ultimately, we want to create new metrics, if you will, for digital scholarship. That's all I've got. So I will turn it over to the next speaker, and we'll take some questions at the end. Thank you.